Well, welcome back to Shattering Myths. It's my pleasure to welcome IQ Al-Rasooli. IQ is the author of a series of books called Unveiling the True Nature of Islam. The exact title of your book, series of books, IQ, it's for some reason when you get older, some things slip the mind. What is their title?
Lifting the Veil, the True Faces of Muhammad and Islam.
Yeah, okay. Lifting the Veil. They're available at Amazon. I have copies myself. They what they do is it's all by topic, and IQ goes through a whole series of topics that have been misconveyed, erroneously presented by Muslims and Islam, and systematically proves that virtually everything that is said about Islam is untrue. And he doesn't do it to be mean. He does it because he recognizes that if someone does not expose and condemn this religion is going to kill billions of people. That if the handwriting is on the wall, this religion, unstopped, is going to perpetrate a world war that will ultimately lead to the demise of what could be half the world's population. Is that a reasonable conclusion, IQ?
100% reasonable.
Yes, sir.
The trouble is that Obama is aiding and abetting them. He is literally helping them fulfill their agenda.
Yeah, first I want you to speak about that. Then I want to talk about what's happening in Turkey. Because I see what's happening in Turkey as being the antithesis of what happened in the rest of the Islamic countries that underwent the Islamic Reformation that we are miscalling the Arab Spring. But first, share your insights regarding Barack Hussein Obama and how he is aiding and abetting Islam.
Well, we've said it, we've discussed it before, you and I, as well as I've done it on almost 400 radio interviews. Obama is a Muslim. Whether he denies it or not is really immaterial and irrelevant. We deal with facts and reality. Let's look at the facts and reality. In his Cairo speech the year he became president, he said that Islam was a great religion, it's a peaceful religion, blah, blah, blah. What contribution even to America and the American Constitution? Now, anybody who studied the American Constitution and American history would know that there was not a single Muslim in sight whatsoever.
Well, actually, there were some Muslims. Yeah, there were some Muslims that actually influenced America's early days. It's the reason that that Thomas Jefferson bought and owned a Quran, is because the Barbary pirates, which were controlled by the Ottoman Empire, were robbing American ships on the high sea, and that early on, America paid about 25% of its gross domestic product, not the most gross domestic product, 25% of its federal budget was paid as bribes to the Ottoman Empire to keep them from pirating American ships on the high seas. And when Jefferson went to meet with the representative of the Ottoman Empire, the Islamic country that controlled so much of the world at the time, and he said, "No, why are you doing this? We're not at war with you. Why are you robbing our ships?" And the guy quoted the Quran and told him that Muslims are ordered by their prophet to rob ships and will continue to rob non-Muslims until the whole world submits to Islam. And Jefferson came back and said, "You know, there is no way a religion can be that vile." And he said, "You know, I need a copy of this Quran. I need to read it to myself to find out if it's true." And he did, and found out it was true.
And then but he acted upon it.
Yeah, and by the way, that is that.
He actually acted upon it.
Yes, he did.
Marines to overthrow right. The Barbary coast, and they never attacked an American ship again.
So, yeah, that's correct. That's correct.
Well,
he realized that.
Instead, now we have Obama, who is allowing them. Look what happened with Obama. He allowed the failure or disposal of Hosni Mubarak of
right.
Egypt. Hosni Mubarak was an ally of America for 30 years. He had
right.
a peace treaty with Israel for 30 years. Then he allowed Gaddafi to be murdered. He actually
right.
helped in the murder of Gaddafi.
Right.
But Gaddafi
and so what we got.
Also.
And what we got for that is the killing of our ambassador with our own weapons. And, of course, in George Bush was no better. George Bush took an ally of the United States, Saddam Hussein, a secular dictator, and saw to it that he was murdered. And what we got is an Islamic regime in its place. And so both have been equally bad in this regard. The biggest problem, though, of course, of the Obama administration is that it is supplying not only cover for Islam by lying on behalf of the religion, but also weapons that America's largest purchasers of weapons now, buying 24 times more weapons from America than Israel, are the Islamic nations like Saudi Arabia and Qatar and Kuwait and Turkey and others like that.
Yes.
And so, what Obama is doing
is supplying the arms that will destroy America.
Correct.
Where is the logic? The reason there is no logic is because the Obama's single mission, from his own perspective, is to downgrade America.
There's no question about it
in my mind. He wants to downgrade America. He always apologizes on behalf of the American people. Why should he apologize?
Yeah.
Why should any American apologize to any human being? When it was America who saved the world from Nazi Germany, from Japan, Imperial Japan, from the Soviet Union, it was America who did that. It was America who intervened in Bosnia and Yugoslavia to save Muslims. It was America who intervened in the Middle East to save Muslims, in Kuwait to save Muslims, in Somalia to save Muslims. And what did America get in return? Hatred. Why? Because Islam hates America. Islam hates anybody who's not a Muslim. It's simple, it's not complicated.
And Muslims hate those who try to help them. They hate those who try to help them. And so, you know, you do not win friends with those who are enraged to hate you by helping them, because they view it as a sign of weakness. I'm going to turn to Turkey for a moment. On this program yesterday and the day before, what I said about Turkey is that it's actually the antithesis of what's happening in the rest of the Islamic world, and that these protests against Erdogan are going to go nowhere. And that is because in all of the other countries, like Tunisia, you had a secular government that was overthrown by a three-quarters majority of fundamentalist Muslims, and now you have an Islamic government with the Ennahda Party. In Libya, you had a secular government that was overthrown by fundamentalist Muslims who made up the majority of Libya, and now you have gone from a secular government to an Islamic government because the majority of Libyans were fundamentalist Muslims. In Egypt, you had a secular dictator who was overthrown by a 75% majority of fundamentalist Muslims. In Iraq, you had a secular government that was overthrown by the United States, and the new government is allied with Tehran because the overwhelming majority, some 65% of Muslims of Iraqis, are not only Shias, but they are fundamentalist Muslims, and they voted a fundamentalist Islamic government. In Turkey, the opposite is true. Erdogan is not a secularist. He is a fundamentalist Muslim. He has taken Turkey from being a secular society to being a Islamic society. And in Turkey, about 70% of Turks are fundamentalist Muslims. About 20% of Turks are secularists. They are thinking individuals who are not wholly corrupted by this religion. And so in Turkey, it is the minority that is trying to oppose an Islamic government. In other words, it's the antithesis of what's happening in these other countries. Is that your view?
It is absolutely true, and they will not succeed easily. They will not succeed.
No, I don't think they'll succeed at all.
It's already an Islamic government. And the minute he starts quoting from the Quran and defaming the people who are opposing him as against the Holy Quran, against Allah, against Muhammad, they haven't got a chance in hell.
That is correct. In fact, last night as he arrived at the airport, and he was met by tens of thousands of screaming, enraged Muslims, the Muslims said, let us have them. Let us go into the square and wipe them out.
Absolutely. That's how Islam deals with its own opponents,
right,
by butchering them.
The situation in Syria, there was, at least in my view, and you can have, if you have an independent point of view, I'd love to hear it. But my view was that the situation in Syria began as a peaceful protest, but was quickly turned into a proxy war by Saudi Arabia and Qatar, wanting to thwart the influence of Iran that had grown because of the American invasion of Iraq. And that it quickly became a proxy war with Iran and Hezbollah on the side of the Syrian Assad government, and Qatar and Saudi Arabia arming the Mujahideen, and it became a proxy war between Sunni and Shia Islam. And that that it was a serious proxy war because the United States and Europe were on the side of the terrorists, the Mujahideen, the rebels, and China and Russia are on the side of the Shias and Assad. And that as a result of this, the only intelligent thing was to back off. And whatever is going to happen, you have no influence over. You can't help. You can't solve. You can't resolve. There is no good side to join. That the United States just should have absolved itself from the whole mess and say, we can't do anything about it. That's my view of it. How would you categorize the situation in Syria, which has changed radically here with the recapture of the most important of the rebel towns?
I agree with you wholeheartedly. There is nothing to add to it. America should not interfere. The Europeans should not interfere. None of their business. None whatsoever. This is an internal affair. And it's not as if Assad is... picking on one group like Christians or Buddhists or Hindus. He is killing anybody who is against the government. The same thing happened with Saddam Hussein. Under Saddam Hussein, and that was there in Iraq. Under Saddam Hussein, if the person does not interfere in politics, nobody touches him. The minute you take side, you're dead.
Correct. That's the nature of a dictatorship. And has there been any Islamic country that hasn't been ruled by an iron hand? Isn't Islam, doesn't it require being ruled by an iron hand?
Only by an iron hand.
Yeah, we'll return to Shattering Myths after the commercial break with IQ Al-Rasuli. Hello, welcome back to Shattering Myths. I am Yetta. We're here with IQ Al-Rasuli, who is the author of a three-volume set called Lifting the Veil. It's the true face of Muhammad and Islam. You can buy it at Amazon.com, and I would highly recommend it. There are a series of countries around the world right now that are plunging into darkness, that are becoming uncivilized with no freedoms, that are becoming savage. They are Tunisia, Libya, Egypt, the Sudan, Somalia, Yemen, Syria, Iraq, Afghanistan. Now, if you wanted to resolve the problem of those countries and to diminish their race to impoverishment and savagery and violence and the hell they're perpetrating now against women and against any minority, what would be the universal solution for all of those manifestations of really hellish behavior?
In my opinion, is to expose the Quran for what it is.
Yeah, I would agree.
Sorry, you agree?
Yeah, there's only one hope for them. They only have one thing in common. They're fundamentalist Islamic countries. They're becoming more fundamentalist Islamic. And as they become more fundamentalist Islamic, they become more savage. And there is less hope. And because Islam is so vicious, the people are enraged and they will ultimately lash out in a world war. The only solution is to expose and condemn Islam so that this trend is reversed.
Agreed. So we are on the same wavelength. I've always said, do not burn the Quran, Do not bury the Quran. Do not ignore the Quran. On the contrary, show it on television, on every news media, in every newspaper, and it will self-destruct.
Yeah, my interpretation of the Quran, when I would write a summary of it, IQ, was that it was the worst book ever written. And I say that by any criteria, that it was literally the worst book ever written. Because any rational book is either organized by chronology or by topic. Is the Quran organized by chronology, in chronological order, or by topic?
It has no beginning, it has no middle, it has no end. As a book, and in every single chapter.
So it's as if you just took isolated statements, unconnected, without any meaningful transition, and you slice them all into pieces, and you put them in front of a huge fan, and wherever they ended up after the whirlwind is how you piece them together. Is that a reasonable explanation of how the Quran is so disoriented and disjointed, disorganized?
Yes. It's a toss salad of everything. You have a chapter. It starts with a verse. Let's say it starts with Noah. The next verse talks about Adam. The one after that about Solomon. The third and fourth one is about Moses. There is no continuity. There is absolutely no meaning whatsoever. Anybody who never read the Bible and reads the Quran and the references in the Quran and to the Bible will have absolutely no idea. Who is Moses? It doesn't tell you. Who was Abraham? It doesn't tell you. These names crop up in the Quran without any background whatsoever.
Yeah, well, the reason that they're...
You know who they are.
The reason that they're there is because Muhammad was incapable of making his rhetoric appear sufficiently credible and religious, so he bought passages from the Talmud, which are rabbinical arguments against the Torah. He bought Talmud passages, paid for them, from rabbis, and his memory wasn't all that good, and his motives were disgusting. So he took plagiarized statements from the Talmud and then twisted them to suit his own agenda. So much of the Quran, in fact, any part of the Quran that sounds even close to being sane, is plagiarized. And, you know, a plagiarized book is a bad book.
Well, my expression is always that Muhammad plagiarized, plundered, pirated, and or perverted verses from the Talmud, verses from the New Testament, from Apocrypha, and from the religion of the pagan Arabs, and the religion of Zoroastrian Persians. It's full of it. It's full of garbage.
Yes. Now, in the Quran, is there any scientific revelation that is true? And on the contrary, are there many scientific statements that are false?
There is a single scientific statement which is true, and every single statement related to science and science and biology, in fact, biology also, is false. In Muhammad's biology, the gestation period of a woman is three months.
So the Quran is a bad book in the sense of the information that it presents is invalid. Why don't we, when we return to Shattering Myths, I'm going to ask you about the morality of the Quran, whether it is an uplifting book or whether or not it promotes immorality and violence, because that would be another way to determine whether it is a good book or a very bad book. We'll return with Shattering Myths and IQ Arasuli after the commercial break. Your host, Yetta, we're here with IQ Arasuli, the author of Lifting the Veil, The True Faces of Muhammad and Islam. He is an expert on the Quran. IQ, if we were to just judge the Quran on the prose, on the writing quality, on the syntax, the grammar, the appropriate use of words, how would you rate it?
Zero.
Yeah, it's really pathetic, isn't it? As a matter of fact, in translation...
I'm not exaggerating.
Yeah. Yeah, in fact, if you were just to rate it and read it based upon on how many words are missing just to make anything make any sense, how many words are invented that have absolutely no meaning in any language, or even the fact that the Quran claims to be in pure Arabic and almost every important word in the Quran is Hebrew. As is the alphabet that it was written in. you just have to say, what a pile of manure. I mean, it's horribly written. Go ahead.
Sorry to interrupt you, but a pile of manure has more benefit than the Quran.
Yeah, that's true, because it can actually cause things to grow. The next issue would be, does the Quran inspire violence? You know, are the calls to be violent, to kill, to engage in jihad open-ended and for the whole world and for all time, or are they limited in place and time so that the jihadists today are really misinterpreting their Quran when they go out and terrorize and kill?
Somebody made an analysis of the word qital, qatil, which is to kill, to rape, to kill, to butcher, to murder.
Mm-hmm.
They found that it is repeated in the Hadith and the Quran 33,000 times.
Hmm.
Never in the history of humanity will you find that number in any kind of book.
Right.
33,000 times.
Right. And for a very real extent, in fact, I look at them as being synonymous. Is the Quran actually Hadith? Is it an oral report from Muhammad and his companions?
No, not the Quran. The Hadith is the one.
No,
which is the
no, but I don't know what you were thinking. You're a very well-read, logical man. Is there any difference in the source of the Quran and the source of the Hadith? Do they come from the same individual?
No, they come from the same source.
Okay, they come from the same source. And is there any difference in the way that the Quran and the Hadith have been communicated to us orally from mouth to ear, over generations? No. All right. So the Quran and the Hadith come from exactly the same source, and they have been passed on to us in exactly the same way. Correct?
Correct.
All right. Is there any difference between the Quran and, so we know there's no difference in the Quran and Hadith in terms of who said it. We know there's no difference in the Quran and the Hadith in terms of how it was brought to us. Is there any difference between the Quran and Hadith in terms of subject matter, content? All right. So they talk about exactly the same thing. They were come from exactly the same person, and they're brought to us in exactly the same way.
Correct.
So how are they different?
One,
other than title. That wouldn't even be true either. How long did it take before the first written copy of the Quran materialized?
It was written under Abu Bakr 2 years after Muhammad was dead.
Well, that's what the Hadith says. Do we have any proof of that?
No.
In fact, the earliest proof is 100 years later. As a matter of fact, what we find is that even Ishaq's biographical collection of Hadith regarding Muhammad was written at about the same time as the first copy of the Quran. During the first 100 years of Islam, where Islam was ruled from the most enlightened place on earth at the time, in terms of having access to, they had access to paper, had been invented by that time, really high quality inks, and that they were producing an infinite number of books, which was in Damascus, Syria. During the first 100 years of Islam, do we have a single proven copy of the Quran, even one copy that has survived that shows that the Quran was written?
No.
So I go back to my original statement. In truth, is there any difference between the Quran and Hadith?
No.
Same subject, same source, same means of conveyance. The only difference is that one is called the Quran, the other is called the Hadith. They're exactly the same. The Quran is Hadith. Now, of course, you say that to a Muslim, and they'd go ballistic. But same subject, from the same source, passed on the same way. And
they go ballistic anyway because they are in denial.
Correct. But equally disgusting. Now, the reason that it's important to expose and condemn this vile and horrible book is because Muslims believe it, and the book orders them to do horrible things. Doesn't the Quran approve of rape?
Yes.
Does the Quran approve of kidnapping? Does it approve of kidnapping?
Yeah.
Okay, and it approves of kidnapping?
Yes.
It approves of terrorism, right? In fact, it encourages terrorism.
Yes.
that incurs.
The terror of Islam is terrorism, is jihad.
Right. Does the Quran approve stealing, calling it lawful and good?
100%.
Does the Quran approve lying?
Yes, taqiyya is one of them, best.
Does Muhammad himself, does Muhammad and Allah both admit that they're liars in the Quran?
Correct.
That they have renounced their vows. Yeah.
They are deceivers. All that's, deceivers.
Yeah. So unless somebody has the courage to tell Muslims that the Quran is the worst book ever written, that there is a 0% possibility that the Quran is true, then they're going to continue to kill based upon its orders. Let me ask you a question. Even if there is, let's just assume for a moment the possibility of a God. And let's assume that this God created the universe with this complex interaction between energy and matter. And that he came up with the language that we call DNA that authored life. Is there any chance that a God smart enough to conceive this interaction between energy and matter and that authored the DNA code for life, authored the Quran?
No chance whatsoever.
One is brilliant. The other is, well, dumber than a stone.
Pathetic. The other one is pathetic. It's beneath contempt. You know, when Muslims say they are being insulted, I always say, how can you insult anything which is beneath contempt? It cannot be insulted.
Right. How do you insult a rapist? How do you insult a pedophile? How do you insult a terrorist? How do you insult a mass murderer? How do you insult a kidnapper? How do you insult a slave trader? How do you insult a man who is incestuous? Was Muhammad all of those things?
All of them, and more.
So how do you insult a man like that?
That's what I said. You can't insult him. He's beneath contempt. How can you insult him?
When Allah says that he spends all of his time in hell, torturing non-Muslims, and also peaceful Muslims, how in the world can you discredit or insult a God who says, I'm going to rip off your skin, and then so I can do it again, I'm going to put your skin back on so I can rip it off again. How would you insult a God like that?
You can't, because Allah is not God.
Well, I guess you could. What you could say is, you could say, you know, Allah is really, really swell. He's such a nice guy. Now, that would be insulting to such a God now, wouldn't it?
Yes.
Now, there are lots of false gods, so I'm gonna give Allah the credit of being a false god, a wannabe god. How about that?
Okay.
Now, but that's assuming, of course, that Allah actually exists, because there is a lot of evidence that Allah was nothing more than Muhammad's alter ego.
That's also true.
That's why the Quran is written as we, correct?
Not only we. Everything in the Quran surrounds the aura of Muhammad, about his life, it's about his wife, it's about his companions, it's about his hatred, his personal hatred, his personal lust. Whatever he wished for, Allah obediently brought down a so-called revelation. Every single verse in the Quran was revealed at the request of Muhammad, which means Muhammad created it, but put it in the mouth of Allah to sanctify it.
Actually, you know, he didn't even totally put it in the mouth of Allah, because he it's written the same way that Paul writes his letters, as we. In other words, Muhammad, by using we, is making he and his God synonymous.
And they are synonymous.
They are synonymous, yeah. They are indeed synonymous. And the reason that we do this is not to be hateful. In fact, there's nothing more loving than exposing lies, condemning lies that are so hateful. Because by doing this, you not only give those who have been beguiled by this religion hope, a chance to live a more fulfilling life, but you also, by exposing and condemning the religion, you protect those who would become its victims.
Correct. Even the ones who are already in the religion might change their mind by waking up.
Correct. I've had thousands of people around the world write me based upon Prophet of Doom, which, by the way, is read far more frequently per capita in the Islamic world than it is in the West. You know, the highest per capita readership of Prophet of Doom is in Iraq, and second highest is in Iran.
Yeah, if you don't mind, let me tell you something. 5 years ago,
yes,
before the Islamic Republic of Pakistan put an end to it, my website, in the name of Allah, 52% of the people who came to website of in the name of Allah came from Pakistan.
Yeah.
52%.
And the reason that that's the case is that Muslims know there's something dreadfully wrong with their religion. Not all of them. You know, if you're a fundamentalist Muslim, you are so whacked out, you are so poisoned, you are so corrupted, that there is no amount of evidence and reason in the world that's going to do you any good. You couldn't process it, you have no interest, your mind is closed, it's seared with rage.
But the mind is not closed, it's completely gone.
Right, but there are
two brain cells of logic, I promise you, no two brain cells of logic, they can't, they're gone,
right.
Finished.
But there's a lot of Muslims who are only Muslims because they were born in an Islamic country and who don't know even 0.01% about Islam that you and I know.
Correct.
And yet they look around them and they see Muslims are responsible for 99% of the world's terror. Islamic countries are the most hellish places on earth to live. And they look at all of the abuse that is being perpetrated against women and against children and against Muslims by Muslims. And they say, you know, may not be the sharpest marble in the drawer, but there's something seriously wrong with my religion. And when they do, what do they turn to? Books like yours, Lifting the Veil. Books like mine, Prophet of Doom. Because there are lots of bad Muslims out there that want to be good people. We'll return to Shattering Myths in a moment. Hello and welcome back to Shattering Myths. IQ, there is a story out today that the United Nations is seeking $5 billion because there'll be 10 million Syrians that will be dependent on foreign aid by the end of this year, and that $5 billion will only last to the end of this year. Is there any merit in the world supplying the Syrians with $5 million, $5 billion worth of aid?
At the cost of sounding very evil, no, I wouldn't supply a penny.
Yeah, and
why can't the Muslim? Why can't the Arabs supply it? After all, it's an Arab country, it's a Muslim country, and the Arabs and the Muslims got more wealth, natural wealth, than God.
Yeah, that's the reality is that the Sauds and the Qataris, those dictatorships, both OPECers, supplied the weapons that turned this into a civil war. So if they want to fix what they broke, let them supply the money. It'll all be confiscated anyway. We have Glenn IQ calling in from Philadelphia. His question, I think, has to do with Muhammad's version of Allah. And if that's the case, the only Allah that exists is Muhammad's version of him. But Glenn, please ask IQ your question regarding Muhammad and his pen pal Allah.
Yes, exactly. As I was hearing you speak of that, I was thinking how an atheist would accuse you or me or any believing person, relative to this issue as being a teapot calling the kettle black. The atheist is going to say, well, your God's just as much of a projection as his God, because it's all gestalt projection, you know.
Yeah, the difference, of course, is that Yahweh proves that he authored his Torah. And he does so through the one vehicle that he can use that proves his not only existence and authorship, but yet does not compel choice, that still leaves the choice on the table, which is that he fills it with the prophecy. And if you just run the probabilities, which is how we prove anything, is through probabilities, through statistics, through the likelihood that something is one thing versus another. You run the probability on his prophecies and you find that the chance fulfillment of all of his predictions exceeds the fundamentalist particles in the universe by almost an infinite amount. And so Yahweh actually proves that that he authored his Torah, and in his Torah he proves that he's the creator of the universe and the author of life. All Allah proves is that he's an absolute and total nincompoop.
Okay.
Okay, yeah, exactly. I also on the foreign aid issue, it's like, how about if those Kuwaitis whose bacon we supposedly saved?
Absolutely.
Yeah, kick in. You know, that would be nice.
Yeah, the fact is, whoever supplies the aid is a complete waste of time. It's like the aid that we provide to the mythical people known as the Palestinians, and the world supplies to them. They buy bullets and guns with it, and they sit around in idle time with their idle time because they don't work because they're now dependent on international handouts, and they plot how they're going to terrorize and kill Jews. So to supply them with aid is actually counterproductive. You can't help a Muslim in a Muslim country unless you first deal with Islam. Unless you rid the disease from the individual, there's no reason to try to treat the disease.
You know, and as I watch these events, I'm continually reminded of the strangeness of this bastardized alliance between supposedly atheist communists and radical Islam. It is the strangest alliance I've ever seen, but it is in complete conformity with Albert Pike's letter to Mazzini.
Yes, he
says they will pit the atheists and the Muslims against the political Zionists. And it's something like that, as bizarre as it is, it was nonetheless prescient and seemingly indicative of an underlying plan.
Do you ever wonder, IQ, as to why socialist, secular, humanists, communists ally with Islam and support Islam? Has it ever just passed through your brain as to why in the world are these desperate entities actually working together against Israel and against the common interest of humankind?
Because exactly. All of them are totalitarian.
Yeah.
Within the so-called liberal mind, which is not liberal, really, it's illiberal, they are totalitarian in mentality.
Mm-hmm. They're collective in mentality.
Totalitarian, and they work together.
Yeah, because really there's very little difference between communism and fascism. Islam has always manifested itself as a fascist nature, but socialist secular humanism, which we assimilate with socialism and communism, is really kissing cousin to fascism, and they both want world dominion, so they can work together to achieve their goals. Well, thank you for listening. We'll be back with you this time on Monday. Thank you, IQ Al-Rasuli.